Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your host for today, and I have, for the first time, a third-time guest, and well-deserving of it, Rafiq Rahman. And Rafiq is the author of the CISO Mind Map. If you're not familiar with it, you should download it and study it, and I'll put the link for it in the show notes. Rafiq, welcome to CISO Tradecraft yet again.
Well, thank you so much. Another opportunity to share information and knowledge about the CISO Mind Map. Just published it. Happy to be on the show.
Well, excellent. I know that you do more than just a CISO Mind Map. People think, okay, maybe you're just kind of this guru up on the hill, and then once a year you come down the Mind Map tablets and say, here they are. But you actually have a real-time job, as I recall. How did you get to where you are right now? What are you doing right now?
Well, absolutely. I have a real job, 9 to 5. And my job is primarily for last, I would say, a year and a half, mostly in product development, product security. Before that, I have been doing a lot of consulting. But recently, I am more and more involved in innovation and how we can bring some new things to the market so that people can do their jobs better and utilize their time better. So that's my real-time job. But overall, other than that, I do a lot of nonprofit work as well. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in bringing new people in information security. I run a program, Cybersecurity Learning Saturday, where we share a number of training and guide people about what are different career areas in information security and help them get into one of those. So there are a number of things that happen. I'm just passionate about the work that I do and the field I am in. And this is interesting, ever-changing field, so it keeps me busy.
It is kind of fascinating. I said Cybersecurity Learning Saturday, and I'm making a note of that. Where would I find more information about that?
We have a LinkedIn page, Cybersecurity Learning Saturday, and we have a group as well. So anybody who wants to get hooked up into it, just follow the LinkedIn Cybersecurity Learning Saturday page, and you will start getting the information that we share.
Well, perfect. That sounds wonderful. And what you're describing your job, say, well, I got a 9 to 5, and I'm saying, you're not doing CISO work right now. If you're lucky, you work a half day, 12 on, 12 off. That was my schedule this week. So anyway,
the good thing is that I get a lot of flexibility to do my job, and so far it's working well.
And that's great, because I think your contributions to the community and to the knowledge base are profound, and I mean that sincerely, because there's a lot of people who will work in this area and they're constantly thirsting for knowledge. They're looking for new ideas, but also ways to organize their ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think what you've done brilliantly is create the organization for the CISO Mind Map. Now, I like mind mapping. I learned that I did in B school. They were doing mind maps, but I learned it before that. So I remember when the professors come in, so I introduce you to this new technique. It's like, since I've been doing it, it's how I write papers. I'll just go ahead and start drawing little lines everywhere. And then once I get the little fractals and I get all my ideas down, because you don't have to think linearly, you put them down, and then I just sweep around and then gather up all the ideas, and that outline is in order. Today, everybody just goes to Gen AI and said, hey, write me a 2,000-word paper or something, and they sit back. But I'm still old school in a way. I like to use my brain. But last year, we talked about the advent of AI, and of course, that's made its way onto your CISO Mind Map. But before we get into that, a quick question. What was your inspiration for the project, and what got you focused on doing this as compared to focusing on creating great products for people or even doing the Learning Saturday?
Well, many, many years back, if I recall correctly, it was 2012, I think, when I published the first one. But
yes,
I was working like a year or so before that on the mind map. And it's a great visual tool. So that's one thing that attracts me. But I was kind of tired of constantly explaining people about what do I do. And they were asking, okay, cybersecurity, what it is? We understand, somebody is doing marketing. We understand somebody is doing management. But what is this field? So I thought I should put something together that visually tells people about how many different things that we get involved in from time to time. So that was the initial inspiration. And I put it on LinkedIn and on my blog site. So a lot of people started asking me. So it looked like people liked the way it was presented. And since then, it has been evolving. I publish once a year new updates and anything that has changed in industry. And if there's something new or even old that people need to keep in mind when they're looking for their next 12 to 18 months of planning. So this is how it has evolved.
And I think it's excellent because what allows one to do is a couple of things. One is if you're trying to define your job description, particularly if somebody says, well, why do we need a CISO? Okay, there are some requirements out there. The show I did a couple of weeks ago on the New York Department of Financial 500 said, yeah, you have to have a CISO if you're that. Okay, got it. So fine. You're at that point merely a hygiene factor. Much like you say, well, you have to have toilet paper in the employee restroom. Doesn't have to be very good. You just have to have something there. That's why you want to take you to the executive washroom because they have the three-ply stuff that the Bears use on the commercials. But nonetheless, I digress. But we're finding then is that in trying to describe what you're doing or either stake out territory to say, hey, this is areas that are reasonably within my responsibility, or perhaps even the other way when someone tries to throw stuff at you and say, okay, well, you're the CISO, you take care of this, you take care of the motor pool, you take, you know, I'm like, no, that's not part of what I do. So what I found then is it's great from the perspective of helping people, A, understand what's involved in their job, and then B, if you're aspiring to be a CISO or you are a new CISO, these are the areas that you can reasonably expect to be held accountable for. And that means you have to have some understanding, meaning if you go through the list, and I counted them up last year, I forget what the number was. It was like 168 or something. Maybe you have a count, maybe you've lost count. But there's a lot in there. And so the first thing, instead of it being overwhelming, is to say, well, maybe I'll prune it down to only what's in my environment. For example, if you don't have healthcare stuff, you don't care about HIPAA and high tech. If you don't, if you're not a publicly traded company, you don't worry about Sarbanes-Oxley and things like that. But I see you've added some new things under the compliance side, like CMMC, which I'll probably do an episode on because I've been a registered practitioner in the CMMC ecosystem since the beginning. Went ahead and wrote the check, and I keep renewing that check, and it gives me the opportunity, finally, that they've got those rules finalized to go, well, they're almost finalized, to be able to add some value. But let me, if I may, do kind of a quick top-level tour. I'm not going to dive into each one. We don't have the time because what I really want to focus on are your focus areas that you've chosen for 2024, 2025. So if we go back through and look at this high-level structure, again, the mind map for people who aren't familiar with it, you take a core idea, and then you list sub-items and then go from there. You could turn this into a giant outline.
Yep.
You could just sweep it around and go 1A, 1 paren, little I, dot, 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 and then it would all fall together linearly. The nice thing here, though, is that you don't have to scroll up and scroll down. You can look at the whole thing. Our part is, of course, is an eye chart because there's so many elements. But at the top level, we've got artificial intelligence and generative AI, and that's new. So we're going to talk about that. The traditional ones, budget, business enablement, project delivery lifecycle, security architecture, compliance and audits, legal and human resources, risk management, identity management, governance, selling InfoSec, which is your internal branding, work from home, what was called automation last year is now called automation and analytics. And the most complex part, the one that takes the biggest chunk there, is the security operations resilience, or basically all the things that are in security ops. So I'd like to take artificial intelligence for 500, Alex. Let's see, see what the answer is. But what are the big changes from this past year, from 2023 to 2024? And then let's go into looking at some of the focus areas. So if you want to talk about the changes and what you thought were important.
Yeah, definitely. So I do want to make all the one point before I talk about
changes. Oh, yeah.
You mentioned about, you know, it's overwhelming and there's a lot of information in it. And over the time, what I have seen, people have been starting to use it in different areas. So like I have seen people using it for education and awareness, some people using it for training. Some people are using it, frankly, for mapping their products, which part of the mind map is served by their product and they're using it to go to market and so on. So there are many different ways that people are using it. And I am surprised, actually. I receive emails and LinkedIn messages about how many different ways people find it useful. As far as changes from last year, every time I publish it, I put some of the items in red color. And those are the changes. In this year's mind map, you would see there are some items in red color. Those are not new items because I have looked very critically into the organization, and some of these may be just moved from one section to another section, which is more relevant for those subcategories. So that's one area. The other changes are, as you mentioned, Gen AI is one of the things that I have been listening from everybody, almost 90-95% people of my surveys and my interviews with people. It's like a hot topic. There's a lot of hype about it. So last year we had a subsection on AI. So this year I have made it a main section because a lot of people are talking about it. There's a lot of hype. There are a lot of promises and expectations. So I thought there may be a new section for that. So those are the main, I would say, changes from last year. But overall, the general structure stays the same. You're absolutely right. The biggest area is the security operations, because that's what everybody has to do from day-to-day perspective to keep their organization safe.
Got it. Yeah, I was looking at AI, and as we shared at a talk I was listening to the other day, and the person had a comment that I thought was quite profound. It says, your job's not going to be replaced by AI. You're going to be replaced by somebody who knows how to use AI.
Absolutely.
Which is an interesting thing, because I had somebody who's come to me complaining, oh, my job's gone, I'm losing enough. Well, fine. What are you going to do about it? And it goes back to the old, who moved my cheese? If you remember that old little business book where some people are around and admire the problem. Wow, my cheese has been moved. I wonder where it went. Well, I'll just sit here and wait till somebody brings it back. As compared to someone else says, yeah, let's go look for new stuff. And so really the encouragement here that I have for people out there is when change happens, you need to embrace it, because it's the one thing that doesn't change is change. Well, it's always going to keep happening. And it, therefore,
you have to embrace it and you have to adapt. That is the key thing.
Right. And so as we look at that, again, I'm not into reading lists, but I notice a lot of the things under the AI, generative AI, are red, which you kind of expect. The governance policies, transparencies for AI, the LLMs and chatbots, safe and ethical uses of Gen AI, how to secure it, protecting your IP, and then even things like NIST has an AI framework that we haven't done an episode on that, but I might get into that as well. And also, I like your last warning that you put in here. I don't remember seeing warnings in previous years. Be aware of hype and vendor promises. And you're right. There's an awful lot of hype out there. Anybody who's owning NVIDIA stock has been doing a happy dance lately, and being a value investor at heart rather than a momentum investor, you're like, hey, it's great. They got some really cool stuff. But at the same time, if you end up with PE ratios that are in the stratosphere, we've seen this happen before in our lifetimes. 1999, we count to 2000, reminds me of one particular case. But nonetheless, what specific words of advice do you have at the CISO level for people who are examining AI and deciding, do I let this thing into my organization? If somebody shows up with an Otter AI note taker into a Teams meeting where you've got sensitive client information being discussed, what should people be thinking about? Is it like, yeah, this is cool, or no, it's going up to the cloud and it's training on my sensitive data? Let's just talk a little bit about AI, and then we'll get into, of course, some of the other things that you think are important for the secure.
Yeah, absolutely. There is there's a lot of chatter, hype. You open newspapers, and you will find a lot of things about AI. Everybody is talking about it's going to revolutionize, and it is going to replace jobs, and it is going to create new areas, and all of that. I think to some level, it is true. I have put that warning sign for the first time in the CISO mind map because there is a reason for that. Last year, when we had discussion on this podcast, we had ChatGPT just released, and it was something new. And since then, a lot of things have changed. lot of hype has been created. There are a number of competitors now. The market is evolving quickly. Every day you look and you find some new tools on the market. So within security teams and even within broader organizations, there are a lot of people who are considering how to use AI. Vendors are going to their sales meeting, and I have not seen any vendor in last probably 6-8 months who is not talking about generative AI. They, one way or the other, they claim that their product uses it and it enhances its capability and so on. But at the same time, as you mentioned, we have seen this episode in the past as well. When I say warning, I am not trying to minimize the importance of generative AI, but I am trying to just make sure that people be a little bit cautious about it. You know, there was a crypto boom at some point, and we had seen that everybody was trying to solve every problem in the world with blockchain. And now there are not many people who are talking blockchain like they used to talk about that. So generative AI is definitely something that is real. It is going to do a lot of good things for people. But at the same time, number one, people need to be aware of this hype. Number two, people need to learn about it. I think that is one of the key things that many people just talked about. They don't really understand how the technology works, what it can do and what it cannot do. Because knowing what it cannot do is going to help people understand what are the right use cases for generative AI and what are not.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are three ways for CISOs to look into this whole generative AI area. Number one, you need to look into how security use cases are going to evolve. So how people can use generative AI within their security organization. For example, to do automation. For example, bring a summary of some events so that they don't have to read, you know, a lot of blog posts and so on. So there are areas where security teams can definitely use generative AI right now.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, people need to look into how their broader organization is planning to use generative AI, either online tool like ChatGPT, Google Bard, and others. And at the same time, if you are developing internal products, how that generative AI technology is being embedded into those internal products. So you need to look into your organization, how it is going to use it. And all of the items that I mentioned in CISO Mind Map, like governance, you know, ethical use and looking at biases and so on. So there are a lot of things that people need to consider, put policies in place. The third thing that CISOs need to look into is adversarial use of generative AI. The bad people, how they are going to use it, what is happening in the industry, and what are the things that they can put in place so that they can be ready when some attacks like generative AI use are coming in their way, so they are ready for that. So I think as long as broadly they are looking into these three areas, they should be good to go. But I really want to emphasize once again that the key thing that every CISO should do is to make sure that their teams and they themselves, they are learning what generative AI is, what it can do, its capabilities, and what are the right use cases.
Yeah, and it's important to understand what generative AI really is or is not. It doesn't think. We're not talking about a giant pseudo brain that is going ahead and doing cognitive processing the way you or I would do. Rather, it's really a prediction model. It's a sequence prediction model. That sounds very unexciting, but a sequence prediction model based on things such as language, English language could be programming language, but if I say the word peanut and then you always say, oh, okay, butter. Okay, if I go peanut butter, give me the next word. It's kind of like the Terminator. And peanut butter and jelly. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Now, as it puts that together, it's just going on the probabilistic models that it's built by ingesting huge amounts of information. And from that perspective, it's not really thinking, but it's telling you, here's the most probable thing. Now, What that means is that it can hallucinate, because if the data is sparse or it's all over the place, if I ingest information and some of it comes from an older period of time and a newer period of time, because I can read classic literature and I can read technical documentation, and I might find out that the use of the same term had a different meaning in 2024 as it did in 1824. And yet that gets, you know, joined together and they're not ranked differently. So first of all, understand it's just text prediction. The other
thing absolutely
is that as we look at that, that it's growing pretty quickly in terms of the knowledge base and the size of these LLMs. And if you're cheap and you want to use ChatGPT 3.5, okay, great. It's free, but it's, if you will, last year's model. So what? Well, last year's model from ChatGPT is probably like saying, oh, hey, I've got a cell phone, and this is my old cell phone from 5 years ago. It's kind of looks about the same as my cell phone from this year, you know, but except they're very, very different capabilities. Most people would not want to say, hey, go ahead and I want an ancient phone. I want something new. So pay the $20, or if you're really cheap, go to Bing and let it query with AI, and then you'll get, for now anyway, the ChatGPT 4.0 engine.
Yeah.
You've mentioned all the go ahead.
So the amazing thing about this new phenomenon of AI, which is the generative AI, which basically means now, in addition to everything it used to do, you can create new things. So it is capable of generating new things, whether it is text, whether it is images, whether it is, you know, something else. It is capable of creating new things, but now your job is moving from, you know, asking answer to some question to asking something, using your imagination and ask something that you want to create. So your creative mind is working more and more when you're using these generative AI tools. So, I mean, it's amazing. I use a number of tools. I use ChatGPT. I use Gemini for the latest things that I need to look into, and so on and so forth. But you're absolutely right. People who are going to survive in the job market of the future, those are the ones who need to know this as a good tool that they can utilize. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind. So there's no doubt about it, but at the same time, be aware of the hype.
Yeah, good point. And so, you know, quick, last little word of caution, then we'll go on to back to our regular discussion, is that when you use AI, you have to first frame it. So instead of saying you are a classic literature expert from the 1820s, or as compared, is that you're a cybersecurity expert. And then you cast that, and what happens then is by giving it a role, as detailed of the role as you can, what that says is of all this inputs that I've done, I'm going to start filtering. I'm going to take the 1824 document and the 2024 document, I'm going to weight them like this, which means I'm going to get responses that are much more aligned with what you asked me to do. And so once you've given it those inputs, you've created filters for this massive amount of information. And then when you ask your queries, you're getting the output. And so you've done an input and then an output. And what you want to do is start out with questions that you already know the answer to. And then what you want to go ahead and start probing around to figure out how this generative AI model, and there are literally hundreds of thousands of them out there.
Absolutely.
Is to say, how well suited is it for this particular task? And if I ask it to do some things, it'll do them quite well. If I ask it to do other things, such as, you know the amount of horsepower you'd need to go ahead and do calculations to count up a column of numbers, just use a calculator. But if you find out that you have to say, I need to be creative. What's creativity? Creativity is creating connections that didn't exist before. And so the advantage of a generative AI is that it's going to pick up peanut butter and jelly sandwich as the most likely. We say, try again. And so what comes after peanut? Well, maybe there might be something that says peanut the horse, or whatever. And all of a sudden you start to get lower and lower probabilities. And that creativity stimulus is to say, well, I never thought about this going with
Absolutely.
That. But if I do it this way, boom, I have a new idea. And so again, it's not thinking of new ideas. It's exploring, giving you a statistical way to explore lower probability pathways that mm-hmm. you might not have thought of, because as humans, we put our own filters on the information.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I think we beat that one up, peanut the horse to death, or at least we've caused some grievous...
You have created a new kinds of peanut.
So to do anything like that. So that was one of your five focus areas for this coming year. The second one was consolidate and rationalize security tools. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, this is actually part of the last year recommendation as well.
Right.
And it is still one of the... issues that security leaders are dealing all over. There are a lot of security tools that have been in different organizations, either coming through acquisitions or organic evolution. Every organization is ending up with having a lot of security tools. And many of those tools, they either overlap functionality. In many cases, there are duplications. Mm-hmm. So people use multiple tools in different areas of their business for the same purpose. The cost to this is that when you have more and more tools, you need to have more and more people who understand those tools, who can effectively use those tools.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't do that, then you have a lot of tools that many people don't know how to use. And you are basically wasting money on buying tools that you use only 10% of.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a much bigger issue, especially in medium to larger organizations. So there has been a lot of thought process amongst CISO community as well as other security leaders that do we really need that many tools? Does more tool enhance your security posture or not? Does it reduce your risk? And in most of the cases, people are of the opinion that no, it does not. More security tools does not mean more security. In some cases, actually, it may reduce your security posture because you're fighting with tools all the time instead of actually focusing on your job. So the recommendation here is that people should seriously look into how many tools they have. They should take the inventory of everything that they have. They should some sort of create a table with the features, functionality of all of those tools, find areas where those features, functionality overlap, and if they can take away some of those tools going forward and focus on one that that creates real value for them. This not only is going to reduce their expense on buying or licensing those tools, but also freeing up time of their teams so that they don't have to fight with these tools, they don't have to manage those tools, they don't have to patch and keep updated and so on and so forth. So reducing security tools is one of the areas that I am hearing from a lot of people that they need to do, unfortunately. There's not a lot of progress on that, so that's why I'm re-emphasizing it, that this is still something that people need to keep their focus on.
Yeah, so that tells a couple of things. One is, as a CISO, I need to look at, as I do my annual budgets, one of the things we often do is it's already there, it's already been approved, and as long as a vendor didn't do an outrageous price change, I can usually get approved for next year. But probably what's absent through a lot of that processing is to say, okay, take out a blank piece of paper, can't use generative AI, can't look up. Write down the 10 things that this tool did for you this past year. Can't look at anything else. But the answer is you might get one or two or three. And that's okay. It's kind of that, because we don't have to memorize these things. Well, we'll go look them up. But then after you've gone ahead and you struggled with that task, then go look them up. Go take a look at the logs. Go take a look at the incidents that it might have identified or the responses you created. And then when you're done with that, you say, how much risk avoidance did this really give me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, fine. This one identified a bunch of spam. Well, okay, fine. Time wasted, a few seconds on each spam. But there wasn't a lot of risk involved. Phishing, maybe a little bit more. Spear phishing, whaling, even more so. Malware attachments being deleted from inbound messages that would have otherwise passed through the regular filters that were put in there by, let's say, my mail provider. That's huge. Because what we find out, I'm running a 365 shop, and I'm running with the Microsoft doing all their filtering for their mail. And they're good, but they're not outstanding. And there is always a space for improvement. And it's not a diss against Microsoft. It's a fantastically huge, complex organization. You can't turn that thing on the dime. And just this week, I noticed that if you had gone into an admin mode, if you're taking a look, you're getting Serbian language on the headers and things such as that. And I did a couple screenshots. It's like, what's going on here? And then I checked Reddit and people said, yeah, it's happening to me too. So it must have been a bad code push. Did that hurt anything? Probably not. It was just raise an eyebrow, look at it. So now by going ahead, as you had suggested, is trying to do what in the military we would call a zero-based review. Don't assume that you need any of these forces. Yeah, we had them for years. Start with nothing. What do you need to respond to the threat today? Well, where's your threat coming from? If we're talking the military model, which is kind of my experience, hey, 3 years ago, 5, 10, 20, but even as recent as 3, we weren't worried about unmanned drones for the most part. Maybe a predator drone, a big thing up there. But these little tiny switchblades or go ahead and put them in the battlefield didn't exist really from a tactical perspective. And now they are everywhere. And so you need a strategy for that. And as we take a look then and compare that into cyber, what's new in the cyber world? We've got generative AI being used by bad guys to not only create more convincing phishing emails by doing deep fakes, by being able to create what looks to be your CEO on a Zoom call telling you, oh, you need to transfer $500,000 to this bank. Don't worry about the fact that it's in Nigeria and it's not in New York. And people get convinced from that. We find that our strategies need to change, and therefore our strategies need to change, our tool sets need to change, and therefore our toolbox and our tools do. So I completely agree with you on that one. It'll be interesting to see the impact in the marketplace and who will be the winners and those who are going to lose market share for those who have a holding like CIBR, whether you take a look at the basket of stocks that they put together for that. We see where that tracks in the year. Everybody thought, oh, this is just going to continue to grow. It may, it will, but like anything else, there's an industry shakeout coming. So probably enough about that one as well. The next one you talk about is cyber resilience. Go beyond incident response. Well, IR, of course, is really important because that's the fire department that we have. Everything else is kind of nice there, but when that fire bell alarm rings, you want to have people coming down the fire pole, put the Dalmatian on the truck and race off. So that's our IR. But why do we have to do more than IR? What do we need to be cyber resilient?
So I think what has happened is that we have focused a lot on incident response, IR. And over the years, I believe we have made a lot of progress as industry. And people are doing, I think, well. If not, I would say excellent. People are doing well. People understand what incident response is. People now understand that they need to have some kind of strategy, they need to have some kind of exercises, they need to have relationships with law enforcement and so on. Even now people realize that their incident response needs to have a negotiator with crypto ransomware people and so on. So I think overall industry it has made a lot of progress. One area that is lacking, okay, you have a good incident response, your business has some disruption. Now, how you get back to the normal state after your incident has happened? I think this is one of the areas that is still, people need to address and think a little bit more about it. So business continuity, disaster recovery, those kind of functions, integrating them into incident response function. One of the reasons that I can think of, and some other people have raised the same concern, that traditionally, a business continuity in many organizations has been an IT function, not a security function. And incident response has been a security function. So there is some coordination that is lacking. So that's what I'm trying to emphasize, that people need to go a little bit beyond, you know, just responding to a security incident, but think about more about how they can make their business resilient so that if a security incident happens, in the best case scenario, there is no business disruption. If that does happen, then it is minimal and you can get back to your normal operations as quickly as possible. So that's what I mean, and that people need to think a little bit more in terms of business than the security incident.
And that makes sense because it's more of a holistic approach. And we think about, as they say, the fire department, you really want them to be there. But there's a lot more, if you will, municipal services that need to be provided, having water and electricity and the gas and the trash taken out and the streets maintained and the snow plows, if you live up north. All those things then become, if you will, part of the maintenance. And as you said, there might be a little bit of negotiation here and there as to what falls under the purview of the CISO or does not. But as I said earlier in the show, great way to go ahead and take a look at this model and say, yep, this reasonably maps to my set of responsibility to model and say, yep, this should push back a bit. The important because what you want to be more than just known as a cost center. Can we get the cheapest toilet paper, if you will? But you've added a couple new things to that this year on your list of what you want to do, which I want to also point out. One is negotiations and give and take, and that's going to be important in business school, but also corporate politics and picking your battles carefully. Anybody who's a frequent listener of our show knows that my model of your career progression goes to a technical management leadership and then political to get to the top. And those are orthogonal skills that expertise in one does not lend necessarily any expertise in another. And many people wonder who moved my cheese when in fact they've reached the end of that runway, so to speak, of that particular element of their career, but they haven't pivoted to go someplace else. So as you brand a security team, what are things that a CISO should consider? And then how do they differentiate themselves from the archaic, hopefully, model of a cost center where we want to minimize our expense and we'd rather turn into a value creation center? Or as my partner and I here at CISO Tradecraft like to say, that security is a business of revenue protection.
Yeah. So there are multiple things. I think the most important thing that every CISO or other leaders in information security, I believe they need to change their mindset a little bit. There are many people who are already there, but we still see some population that is still thinking security as a technology function, as part of IT, and so on. The right mindset for CISOs is that they are business leaders, just like any other business leader. So, for example, there is a chief marketing officer. Chief marketing officer is a business leader. Chief marketing officer's job happens to be the marketing. There are finance people, the chief financial officer. Similarly, there is some legal officer. All of them, they are business leaders. Their job happens to be some part of running that business. Chief Information Security Officer is also a business leader. CISO's job happens to be maintaining the security and safety from the at networking and IT and cyber perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing people need to do is to change their mindset and start believing that they are one of the business leaders, just like other business leaders in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one thing. Now, once you get into that mindset, then obviously all of the other things that you mentioned and I have listed in the mind map that become part of your work that you do, you have to build relationships. You have to have skills to negotiate different things. In mind map, there are a lot of things, and I have made, actually in my blog post, I have made this point that you don't need to be accountable for each and everything that is listed in mind map. There are areas where you can negotiate that someone else should take the responsibility of some of this, and you can be in a consulting role. You can provide them the guidance.
Mm-hmm.
But accountable personality or role may be someone else. So those kind of negotiations do happen and need to happen. But basic idea is that move your hat from traditional security and that mindset of thinking to a business focused leader who has a certain job, but it is part of the hierarchy of running the overall business. So that's the main point that I wanted to make. The other thing that you mentioned is about creating value. We have been cost center for a long time, but there are many ways people can work and think about how their work actually creates value and show that it creates value. for the business. So, for example, if you are in, let's say, a software development organization, and your job, if you move it to you know, being part of the architecture and definition of design, so you can avoid a lot of fixes that you have to make later on when the product is already developed. So if you can focus on those things, and there are industry benchmarks that, you know, a bug or architectural design issue that is fixed in the architecture and design phase costs much less than once something is put in production. So you can show your value by fixing those things in earlier stages of the development. There are other ways of showing your value, for example, in incident response area, that how much an incident costs business in terms of business interruption. This is one of the things that many people don't realize, that you can put some cost and show that you have created so much value because you stopped disruption of business compared to last year when you had 2 days of disruption, and now you responded to an incident and you had no disruption in business, and so on and so forth. So there are ways to show and create value for the business, and especially make it your part of your metrics and reporting and whatever you do to the board. So I really wanted to emphasize this is one of the areas that we are still lacking as an industry, and we need to do more work on it.
And I think they work together, because if you focus on the business value of security controls, if you can demonstrate you've avoided repeating an outage, you have reduced risk in this area, you have improved performance, you've cut down the cost of development because you've, if you will, shifted left, all the things that we often say we ought to do, then you, that is consistent with your concept of building a brand for the security team, which is as a business partner, not as an adversary. And I think that culture of how you present that, one of the things that I do in organizations when I work as a CISO, when we set up things such as security training and phishing exercises and whatever, is that there's no blaming. There is no wall of shame. And I hear some people love to do that. But what I want people to do is they want them to do their own face palm and go, yeah, I should have known better. Because when they realize they're not going to be criticized, when they realize that no one's going to make fun of them, they're not going to be put on report, you build a level of trust. And that level of trust has come. Well, I've had some fairly senior people call me up and they said, hey, G-Mark, I think I just clicked on something I shouldn't. Okay, let's take a look at it. Yeah, I think you did give up some credit. So let's change your password. Let's do this. And then I sat back and I just watched the logs. And about 10 minutes later, bam, all the attempts coming in from all over the planet. They got a pretty sophisticated adversary trying to use what was a credential that was valid 10 minutes earlier. And so, you know, we've got MFA in there and that helps, but there's even some MFA attacks. So without getting down that rat hole, we find out then is that when you do that and people say, hey, it's like a trusted advisor. You can call up and you say, hey, Rafiq, I think I'm in trouble. Can you help me out? And you help them out. And it stays confidential. It's like a confidential employee assistance line. We add a lot of value there. So yep. Summarizing that, as we're getting close to the end of the show, the five focus areas you point out: adopt a cautious approach toward Gen AI, consolidate and rationalize security tools, cyber resilience going beyond incident response, building a brand for a security team, and then maximize the business value of security controls. I can't help but think about, like, last year when I said, what are you thinking about for 2024? And because Gen AI came on the scene very quickly, any thoughts on what might be coming up for 2025? Anything that's kind of brewing right now that is kind of like a hurricane? It's out there, but it's, you know, it's going to eventually work its way over.
Well, that's a very good question. I usually try to avoid answering that question.
Okay, then we won't. I'll retract the question.
And I gave you the reason why I try to avoid that question. I think there are plenty of people, there are analysts and other organizations who do a lot of prediction, what is happening next year, next 3 years, and so on. They do their own research. Frankly, I try to stay away from that prediction things more and more based upon the experience, and I try to focus on what I really need to do. That's why when I look at these focus areas, I think about what I need to do in next 12 to 18 months, rather than worrying about what could happen in next 12 to 18 months. But you know, there are a lot of things that people have been talking about. Oh, you know, quantum computing is coming and we need to do X, Y, Z and, you know, so and so. But I try to avoid those things because those are not my focus area. My focus area is being practical, like how we run our show more efficiently, and how we focus on our business. When things happen, we'll deal with them. And there are plenty of people out there to make those critics.
And that's a good point, but there's not too many people who do what you do with the level of excellence that you do with the CISO mind map. So I want to commend you and thank you on behalf of the community for doing what you do. I think you're a wonderful thought leader, and I look forward to having this conversation again next year. So for our listeners, thank you very much for being a part of our CISO Tradecraft audience. We hope you found this episode interesting. If you want to follow up on Rafiq Rehman, RafeqRehman.com, or look at our show notes, you'll have a click through on that. Also look at his LinkedIn post, and you'll find out that you can learn an awful lot there, also about your cyber learnings on the Saturday. For those who want to follow us on and they're not doing so, please do so on LinkedIn. Look for CISO Tradecraft. We have a lot more than just podcasts, and we also are able to be on YouTube. So if you're not subscribing on YouTube, please do so. We look forward to seeing you there. If you have any questions for us or you'd like to follow up with CISO Tradecraft, please do so. You can reach us through LinkedIn. It's probably the easiest way. Otherwise, Rafiq, thank you very much for being our honored guest this time. And we appreciate so much your insights and what you have as your CISO mind map for 2024 to 2025. And this is your host, G. Mark Hardy. Thank you very much for listening. And until next time, stay safe out there.